This nation was founded by men of many nations and backgrounds. It was founded on the principle that all men are created equal, and that the rights of every man are diminished when the rights of one man are threatened.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, father, we don't need me with brutality. Talk to me, honey, so you can see. Oh, what's going on? What's going on? Hey, what's going on? Tell me what's going on. Ooh. Come on, man. Woo. Oh,
welcome to viewers, listeners, and guests in the studio tonight. My name is Judy Bowman, and I'm so happy to be here with Jeremy Hansen and Melvin Ishmael Johnson. Jeremy founded Quipped and engineers at Skid Row Studios in downtown L.A. Ishmael is a playwright and artistic director of his recovery workshop program, Drama Stage Qumran. And together we're bringing an idea to life, drama on the radio. Of course, the real stars are our actors. They're eager to get the story out and will introduce themselves. So we'll let Yuri, her husband Bill, plus Malcolm, of course, fill in the details. And, just as an FYI, J. Edgar Hoover's here too, still watching. He just refuses to give up trying to spin the facts his way. But you'll see what I mean. Here's Tim Toyama's one-act play, Yuri and Malcolm X.
Ah, yes. The sweet sound of the great Marvin Gaye. Good evening. My name is Sharon Omi, and I'll be reading the part of Yuri Kochiyama and Yuri's mother.
I'm Dana Lee, and I'm Yuri's workhorse husband, Bill Kochiyama. I'll also be reading the roles of Yuri's father and among other parts.
Good evening. My name is Nick Gilley, and I'll be reading the part of Malcolm X and other parts.
I'm Al Rossi, and I'll be reading the role of J. Edgar Hoover. I'm in charge. Let's begin.
Scene: The Gospel According to Malcolm and Yuri and Edgar.
Who taught you to hate the color of your skin? Who taught you to hate the texture of your hair? Who taught you to hate the shape of your nose and the shape of your lips? Who taught you to hate yourself from the top of your head to the soles of your feet? Who taught you to hate your own kind? who taught you to hate the race you belong to so much that you don't want to be around each other. You know who. Before you come asking Mr. Muhammad, does he teach hate, you should ask yourself who taught you to hate being what God made you.
I was red, white, and blue when I was growing up. I was a Girl Scout. I taught Sunday school. I was very American, but I was provincial. We were just kids rooting for our high school. I love sports, especially baseball.
American democracy is on trial. America must face facts. Americans must realize that legions of foreigners are making tremendous sacrifices in order to destroy everything that we hold dear. To keep our country strong, all real red-blooded Americans must keep it unsullied by foreign influences. We have no place in this great country for these scheming peddlers who owe allegiance to other lands.
Scene, Erie's father.
In 1939, war with Germany, Italy, and Japan appears inevitable. The FBI prepares the custodial detention list, a list of individuals, both aliens and non-aliens, who would be dangerous to the safety of the American people in the time of war. Sunday, December 7, 1941, the dirty sneak attack on Pearl Harbor. Seiichi Nakahara, Yuri's father, is on the detention list. Nakahara has just returned from the hospital where he had had surgery for an ulcer and was treated for diabetes. Yuri, 19 years old, has just returned from teaching Sunday school. The Japanese are all scared and frightened. Good.
Pop, there are men standing outside our front door. Yeah. I'll find out who they are.
FBI, is there a Seishi Nakahara living here?
Yes, that's my father.
Where's he right now?
He's resting.
Well, where is he?
He's in his bedroom.
Get out of my way.
What are you doing?
Seishi Nakahara, wake up. Get out of bed.
Leave him alone.
Put on your bathrobe and get your slippers.
This isn't right. Why are you doing this? Where are you taking him? Stop. Please stop.
The next day, we return there, search the house for evidence and of espionage and sabotage.
Where have you taken my father? Please, my husband is ill. He needs his medication. Where is my husband?
We'll tell you when the time is right, not a second sooner. After a few days, we let them know that Nakahara is in the federal prison at Terminal Island.
Please, let me bring my husband home so he can get well. And then you can take him back to prison.
No.
Why not?
America's at war. A war that you started. We need to keep an eye on him.
Then put my father in a hospital until he gets well, and then you can put him back in prison.
All right, sure. Why not?
I have my husband's medication. He's diabetic. Please, give my husband his medicine.
No, he'll be in a hospital. He'll receive excellent care there.
Here. Please give him his medicine.
No. Go away. We put Nakahara in a room with wounded sailors from the Pacific. We put a sheet around his bed that says, Prisoner of War. The sailors look at Nakahara with hate. He's terrified. And then we interrogate him. So, you received a telegram from Admiral Nomura just before December 7th. Sorry, cannot meet you for dinner. Regret unable to meet Sama.
Yes, we were expecting him for dinner. But he had to fly to Washington, D.C. Admiral Nomura is my friend.
What did you do with the Japanese Navy?
I sold them fish.
Admiral Nomura says Sama in the telegram.
He was coming over for dinner. Sama is his favorite fish.
Liar. Sama is code for something. What's it really mean?
Fish. Please, I am tired. Sick. Please let me rest.
No. No. Not until you tell me the truth. This is treason. You betrayed my country. You're a spy. You're a traitor. We all know all about you. We've been watching you for years. We ran to the house across the street from you. We know everything about you and your family. You played golf with Japanese naval officers.
They're my clients. I sell them fish. Why were you watching us? We're good Americans.
You make me sick. We treated you good. We let you have a good business, a real nice life. And this is the way you return your generosity, our kindness? Huh? You spy on us, you scum. Are the Japs going to attack Los Angeles? We allow Yuri and his brother Pete to see Nakahara. Pete has just joined the army and is wearing his uniform.
Hi, Pop. Luke is here. It's Pete.
No, I told you everything. I have told you the truth.
Pop, it's Pete.
Please don't beat me. I'm not a spy. No more interrogations. I'm not well.
What did they do to you? Pop, what's wrong?
We get nothing out of Nakahara. We tell him to go home.
Papa, can you hear me? Please, say something. Papa. Pop, do you know who we are? Can you talk? It's me, Yuri.
Nakahara dies that first night. For the record, he dies of natural causes.
Sabura-san, I must tell you that everyone coming to the funeral will be watched by the FBI. There's also the 5-mile travel ban, so we understand if you don't come. What? You'll come? Thank you. Thank you.
To our surprise, the funeral is well attended. We have lots of pictures. They bury Nakahara in a cemetery on the other side of town. The local cemetery won't have him. For the record, we had nothing to do with that. The spy, the saboteur, the traitor must be met and conquered. In doing so, the FBI must be certain that the innocent are not injured. You can be of valuable assistance by reporting to the FBI anyone you believe is hostile to our nation. Remember, the FBI is a fact-gathering organization only. We don't clear anybody. We don't condemn anybody. The minute we begin making recommendations on what should be done with this information, we become evil. The FBI is very proud of keeping our country free and making sure that freedom is guaranteed as an unalienable right.
I will never forget what happened to Pop. I saw what the American government did to him with my very own eyes. I was so red, white, and blue. I was so naive about so many things.
Scene, meeting Malcolm.
They called Mr. Muhammad a hate teacher because he makes you hate dope and alcohol. They call Mr. Muhammad a black supremacist because he teaches you and me not only that we're as good as the white man, but better than the white man, yes, better than the white man. You are better than the white man, and that's not saying anything. Who is he to be equal with? You look at his skin. You can't compare your skin with his skin. Why, your skin looks like gold beside his skin. There was a time when we used to drool in the mouth over white people. We thought they were pretty because we were blind. We were dumb. We couldn't see them as they are. But since the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has come and taught us the religion of Islam, which has cleaned us up and made us so we can see for ourselves, now we can see that old pale thing to look exactly as he looks. Nothing but an old pale thing.
The enemies of freedom seek to undermine our nation and to implant their doctrines of hate in this country. They have penetrated every realm of decency, seeking allies in our schools and our churches. They've joined reform organizations and civil liberties groups, and they've played dominant roles in our unions. These cowardly subverters seek to paralyze by intimidation. They beat the tom-toms of racial hatred and prejudice to gain the sympathy of an unsuspecting public. They know no rules except to destroy. They have no code but to subvert with the hope that America will crumble. Yuri grows up. It's 1963. She's 41 years old. She marries, has kids, lives in Harlem. She meets the Black Messiah. The fateful date is October 16th, 1963. Yuri and her son Billy are at the Brooklyn courthouse for a hearing. They'd been arrested during a protest, along with 600 other idiots, for demanding more jobs for colored and Puerto Rican construction workers. Communists. Who do they think they are? Suddenly, the Black Messiah is in the courthouse. All the colored people surround him and shake his hand.
Billy, I want to meet Malcolm X, but I'm not black. I don't know how he'll react. What do you think?
There was an article in Life magazine where Malcolm X ridiculed a white woman. No surprise there. He had given a speech at a college, and this Caucasian co-ed was so affected by him, she catches a plane to New York and finds him in Harlem. Everything about her says Deep South.
Well, excuse me, Mr. X. I was at the college where you spoke last week, and I was very impressed. You gave me an understanding of what it means to be a Negro in this country. Don't you believe there are any good white people?
People's deeds I believe in, miss, not their words.
Well, what can I do?
Nothing.
And then she bursts into tears and runs out.
Billy, I want to meet Malcolm X. Well, now or never. Can I shake your hand?
What for?
To congratulate you.
For what?
For what you're doing for your people.
What's that?
For giving them direction.
According to the FBI agent covering Malcolm X that day, an Oriental woman and Malcolm shake hands. She appears surprised and excited.
I admire the kinds of things you're saying, but I don't agree with you about something.
What do you disagree with me about?
Your harsh stance on integration. Why can't you believe that people of all races can live together?
I can't give you a 2-minute lecture on the pros and cons of integration right here. If you want, come to my office and we'll discuss it there.
We didn't know who that Oriental woman was. The next day, Malcolm's on the radio.
And I, for one, believe the white man is intelligent enough. If he were made to realize how black people really feel and how fed up we are without that old compromising sweet talk. Why, you're the one who makes it hard on yourself. The white man believes you when you go with that old sweet talk. Because you've been sweet talking him ever since you've been brought here. Stop sweet talking him. Tell him how you feel. Tell him what kind of hell you've been catching. And let him know. If he's not ready to clean his house up, he shouldn't have a house. It should catch fire and burn down.
The next day, Yuri writes a letter to the Black Messiah.
I just finished listening to your radio broadcast. I could not constrain myself from writing to you. I shall always admire you and respect you for what you are doing for your people, giving them pride in their heritage. You are also giving much to all of us. It may be possible that non-Negroes may wake up and learn to treat all people as human beings. And when that time comes, I am sure that your pronouncement for separation will be changed to integration. If each of us, white, yellow, and what have you, can earn our way into your confidence by actual performance, will you, could you, believe in togetherness of all people?
After this, our agents report an Oriental woman at every speech given by Malcolm.
The most disrespected person in America is the black woman. The most unprotected person in America is the black woman. The most neglected person in America is the black woman. As Muslims, we respect our women and protect our women. The only time a Muslim gets really violent is when someone molests our women. We will kill you for our women. I'm making it plain, we will kill you to protect our women.
She writes another letter.
You speak for the most downtrodden, shackled, and ostracized. You are not afraid to spell out the grievances as they are, how the injustices are perpetrated and who commits them. People must be made to see the truth.
Several months later, the Hiroshima Nagasaki World Peace Mission, a group of communists, if you ask me, visits Harlem. They're spreading propaganda against nuclear weapons. That group has three commie Japanese journalists who are alleged atomic bomb survivors. And they want to meet Malcolm X more than any other person in America. Bill and Yuri are having a reception for them at their apartment. She leaves messages for Malcolm in his office. Malcolm's a little busy. He's just been exiled from the Nation of Islam by Elijah Muhammad. And our Arvik undercover agents report there are rumors that Malcolm's going to be assassinated.
Yuri, he's not coming.
There are so many people expecting him. Our place is packed. They'll be so disappointed. He has to come.
Did you get any calls from his office?
No.
And if he does come, how's he going to treat our guests? We have some white people here. Is he going to be hostile towards them?
I don't know. I guess we should start the meeting. Wait, there's someone knocking on the door. Bill, he's here. Malcolm X is in our living room.
Yuri, thank you for inviting me to your reception. Can you introduce me to your guests? I'd like to meet everyone.
Of course, Malcolm. Of course.
He shakes hands with everyone. He smiles a lot. Everyone relaxes. Everyone feels important. Everyone likes him. And then he speaks to the Japanese journalists.
Thank you for coming to Harlem. I understand you went to our world's worst fair here in Harlem instead of the white man's world fair. At the world's worst fair, you saw the actual living conditions of our people. You saw the broken stairwells. You saw the toilets that won't flush, the bathtubs that are clogged, and you saw all the garbage on the streets because the sanitation department won't pick it up. My brothers, you were bombed, and you have physical scars. Racism has bombed you. Oh, yes, it was fine and dandy to drop the atomic bomb on the Asians. But think about this. Would America have dropped the atomic bomb on white people? You know the answer. We, too, have been bombed. And you saw some of those scars in our neighborhood. We are constantly hit by the bombs of racism. When I was in prison, don't be shocked when I say I was in prison. We're still in prison. That's what America means, prison. When I was in prison, I became educated by reading everything I could get a hold of. After lights out, I read by the dim glow of the hall light. That's why I have to wear these glasses. I start with the dictionary, read every page, every letter from A to Z. I read a lot of history. I love history. Read a lot about Asian history. All of Asia was colonized by Europeans except Japan, only because Japan didn't have any resources that the Europeans wanted. All over Asia, European and American imperialists are taking rubber and oil and everything else they can lay their hands on. But now America needs Japan for military bases, especially on Okinawa. And so now, Japan is occupied. How many of you have heard of Vietnam? Mark my words. The struggle of the Vietnamese is the struggle of all third world people. It is the struggle against imperialism, colonialism, and neocolonialism. All progressive people should protest if the U.S. military makes excursions into Southeast Asia.
Later, after Malcolm's talk, our informant reports this conversation between Yuri and Malcolm.
Brother Malcolm, thank you for coming today. It means a lot to everyone here.
Yuri, I apologize for not answering your letters. I've read all of them. I'm going to Africa and the Middle East soon, and I promise I'll write you. You have a good family. Your daughter is very nice and really smart. What's her name?
Adi.
Do you have other children?
I have 5 more. They're at the movies. A friend thought it might get pretty hectic here today, so offered to take them. Audie wanted to stay and help.
What movie are they seeing?
Mary Poppins.
Imagine that.
They're going to be so mad that they're not here.
Okay. Maybe I can meet them another time. You have a good family. I can tell from your letters. And seeing you, I have a good sense of people. I can tell right away what a person's like. You're a good person.
Thanks.
I envy you. I love my family, but I don't get to see much of them. Once in a while at airports, I have a few minutes between planes, and my wife will bring my children to see me.
That's terrible. But they must know you're doing good things for your people.
I hope so. But I know they want their daddy home. Yuri, don't give up too much. Attend to your family. I was hesitant about coming here today. I'm a little sorry I did. Because now the FBI knows about you. And we'll be keeping an eye on you. I hope I haven't put your family in jeopardy.
What? The FBI?
Yes, the FBI. They follow me everywhere. There are 2 white crackers across the street. They probably already know about you because of your letters. They read all my mail.
The FBI killed my father.
What? How'd that happen?
The FBI picked up my father on December 7th, Pearl Harbor Day. He was very sick, but they still interrogated him. My father died one day after the FBI let him come home.
That's horrible, Yuri. I'm sorry. The Ku Klux Klan murdered my father.
Oh, no.
Yes, Yuri. The KKK threw him under a streetcar, nearly cut my father in two. The police said it was an accident. KKK also burned down our house twice. Nearly killed my brothers and sisters. Drove my mother insane. She's in a mental hospital.
Why do people do such horrible things?
We need to fight it. I hope I have more time. You might have heard that I'm going to be assassinated.
Malcolm, no. Those are rumors.
No, not rumors. I know one day they'll get me.
You know this for sure?
Yes, for sure. The men that are going to assassinate me, I know what they're capable of. Why? Because I train them. Every day I wake up, I feel blessed. I get one more day. Time is so precious. I don't sleep much. Every minute counts. I hate people who don't wear watches. I'm a dead man, but not yet. Yuri, promise me this, that you'll carry on after I'm gone.
I promise.
Good. Please be careful. The FBI will be watching you.
Damn right. That's for sure.
But why? I can't believe the FBI is interested in me. I'm a nobody. Just a housewife. A mother.
Yuri, you're as dangerous to them as I am.
I don't understand. You're joking.
No, I'm not.
But you're a leader and a great speaker. You have the power to make people do things. They listen to you. You can change people's minds.
Maybe, or I just have a big mouth. I'll be dead in a year. You're a leader. You organize people. You make things happen. People will follow you. I just speak here, give an interview there, talk to anybody who will listen. But you do things.
You're more important than me.
Time will tell, Yuri. Time will tell. Speaking of time, I need to get going. I promise I will write you from Africa. Take care, Yuri. Goodbye.
As a people, we've lived too long in a fool's paradise. As a people, we've become soft. We've been led to believe that struggle is not essential. But now, we've awakened from a puppy-scented dream and must face the truth. and must struggle for our country as never before. The hard road lies ahead. We must be physically, morally, spiritually, and mentally fit. Even though the nation's future is clouded, if we do our duty, the sun will arise again upon a land safe and free and uncontaminated, and the hellish hordes of hate will be met and will be conquered.
Scene, Yuri and Bill, part one.
Yuri finds her comrade in arms.
I cannot imagine life without my Bill.
At this point, a little background on Yuri and her co-conspirator, Bill Kuchiyama. November 1943. Yuri is 21 years old and happily living in Jerome, Arkansas relocation camp. All the Japanese on the West Coast have been put in relocation camps because it was thought they would aid the enemy. But I disagreed with that decision. I thought it was a big waste of time, effort, and money. I told FDR that the FBI had already rounded up the spies and traitors, so what's the purpose? Politicians. I hate them. No backbone. Giving in to public pressure. No, I digress. In Camp Yuri organizes a group of women to write letters to Japanese-American soldiers. It begins with a few women and eventually ends up in the hundreds. They write letters to over 13,000. Yuri knows how to organize and brainwash. Of course, it's not hard to lead docile people. So, Yuri is also working for the USO. Her job is to welcome soldiers from Camp Shelby, Mississippi, who travel to the camp to get coddled, you know, eat home-cooked food, play a little baseball, dance with girls. Yuri's working her usual shift. Two busloads of GIs show up, and Yuri's assigning each GI a place to stay for the weekend. She's also taking names and information from each GI to add to her mailing list. Along comes this guy, a cigarette dangling from his mouth.
Hiya.
Hello, soldier. What's your name?
Bill Kuchiyama.
And where do you live?
Manhattan Island.
Oh, is that near Oahu? Which island is that?
What?
Is Manhattan Island one of the Hawaiian islands?
No, honey. New York City. The Big Apple.
Oh, right. I knew that. Do you have any brothers or sisters?
120.
Stop being a wise guy.
I have 120 brothers and sisters. Really? All right. I grew up in an orphanage. I'm a student at New York University. You know, the big time place where only really smart people go.
And they let you in?
Care to dance later? Better watch out. I do the Lindy.
Lindy, huh? We'll see. Dear Bill, okay, you dance pretty good. I hope you don't mind if I write you.
Dear Yuri, hey, don't write so many letters, okay? You write 3 letters a day. It's embarrassing. Getting a whole bag at mail call, my buddies are jealous. But your letters are swell.
Dear Bill, everyone is very happy that we're getting married. They were surprised since we've only been seeing each other a few times. Oh, well.
Dear Yuri, I know you must be disappointed that we're not getting married before I ship off to Europe. I hope you understand that my father needs to meet you and your family before we get hitched. Anyway, the war won't last forever, and as soon as I come back, we're getting married.
Dear Bill, I began a scrapbook called My Bill, dedicated to all of the children we will eventually have. But just give us time.
We beat the pants off of Japan and Germany. Italy doesn't count. I mean, Italians. After Bill returns to the States, they get married, settle down in Harlem, and raise 6 kids. Then Yuri goes crazy.
Bill, there are so many problems in Harlem, especially with the schools and sanitation and no jobs. I'm itching to do something. Our youngest child is a year old. I hope you don't mind. I want to get involved with the movement. And don't worry, I'll take the kids with me.
Does it matter what I think?
Of course it does. Bill, I need to help.
Okay. But don't get in any trouble.
At this point, Yuri's true character surfaces. She joins the Harlem Parents Committee. They feel they have a problem. Too many kids are being hit by cars in front of the school, so a sit-in is organized. So Yuri, along with other parents, puts her kids in the street to demand a traffic signal. Crazy. Misguided.
Yuri, why did you do that? Our kids could have been hurt.
She gets more involved. Now she's taking their kids to protest rallies, has the kids handing out leaflets. She becomes even more involved, now doing things on her own. Organizing, picketing, boycotting. She's going to 15 meetings a week. When she's home, she stays up to 5 in the morning writing to political prisoners, addressing leaflets for a mailing, composing articles for newsletters and newspapers, and organizing political activities. Then, one night...
Bill, I'm going to a demonstration tomorrow. We're protesting against a construction company that's not hiring blacks or Puerto Rican workers. The plan is to sit in front of the trucks entering the construction site. Billy wants to come along. We might be arrested. It's for a good cause.
You be careful. Very careful.
At this point, Yuri meets the Black Messiah. She and Bill are now on our list. We need to keep an eye on the termites who are burrowing deeper and deeper into our social order. We need to do something.
Scene. Postcards from Brother Malcolm.
And so after meeting Yuri and Bill, the Black Messiah scampers off to Africa. He writes postcards to Yuri and Bill. We have copies, of course.
Greetings from Kenya, the home of those great African patriots, the Mau Mau Freedom Fighters.
Greetings once again from the cradle of civilization where the recent African Summit Conference was a tremendous success.
Greetings from the ancient Valley of the Kings. After 7 days amid the archaeological sites of the ancient Niles, I feel like an expert in Egyptology. But I haven't forgotten our own problems there in the States, not even for 1 minute, or neglected it.
Still trying to travel and broaden my scope since I've learned what a mess can be made by narrow-minded people.
Greetings from the holiest and most sacred city on Earth. I often think of the warm friendliness of your wonderful family.
I read all of your wonderful cards and letters of encouragement, and I think you are the most beautiful family in Harlem.
Bill, we just got another postcard from Brother Malcolm. It's really interesting. It looks like he's changed his thinking on integration.
Greetings from the ancient land of Arabia. Allah has blessed me to visit the holy city of Mecca, where I witnessed pilgrims of all colors from all parts of this earth, displaying a spirit of unity and brotherhood like I have never seen before. It is truly a sight to behold. There are tens of thousands of pilgrims from all over the world. They're of all colors, from blue-eyed blondes to black-skinned Africans, but all are participating in the same ritual, displaying a spirit of unity and brotherhood that my experiences in America had led me to believe could never exist between the white and the non-white. These Muslims don't call themselves white. They don't call themselves black. They look upon themselves as human beings, as part of the human family. And therefore, look upon all other segments of the human family as part of the same family.
Malcolm is changing. He has a run-in with our agent, who's covering him in Africa.
Look, I know you're following me. Can't you give me some peace? I am eating breakfast. How dangerous is that? You think I'm John Dillinger. If you want to know anything, just ask me.
Yeah. I'm following you. You're a threat to my country. Yeah, we need to know everything about you so that we can stop you from destroying America. Vigilance, my friend.
You fool. You white, devil. You don't know me. What I stand for, you're just a fool who lets someone else do the thinking for you. No matter what kind of job a man has, he should at least be able to think for himself.
You're anti-American, un-American, seditious, subversive, and a communist. You're ruining America for us.
You just proved how little you know about me. The only thing the FBI can find me guilty of is being open-minded. I seek the truth. I weigh everything on its own merit. You want to know what I'm against? I'm against straitjacketed thinking and straitjacketed societies. I respect every man's right to believe whatever his intelligence tells him is intellectually sound. I respect everyone else. I expect everyone else to respect my right to believe likewise. You know, I think you're a Jew with an anglicized name.
That's outrageous. I don't have a drop of Jew blood.
You hypocrite. You're ashamed of your own heritage, of your own family, of your father, a mother, and everything that came before them. I pity you. At least I know who I am, and I'm proud of it.
Well, the Black Messiah was right about that agent. It turns out he was Jewish. We fired him. Well, not because he was Jewish, mind you, because he lied. The FBI does not discriminate against Jews and coloreds, for that matter. The fact that there are so few of them in the Bureau is because they're not qualified. That's not my fault.
Since I learned the truth in Mecca, my dearest friends have come to include all kinds. Some Christians, Jews, Buddhists, Hindus, agnostics, even atheists. I have friends who are called capitalists, socialists, and communists. Some of my friends are moderates, conservatives, extremists. Some are even Uncle Toms. My friends today are black, brown, red, yellow, and white.
Yeah. One of our wiretaps picks up a very disturbing conversation.
It makes me think about that little blonde co-ed who asked me, "What can I do?" And I said nothing. I regret I told her that. In Africa, I saw white students helping black people. Seeing something like that kills a lot of argument. I wish I knew her name, or where I could telephone her, write to her. Tell her what I tell white people now when they present themselves as being sincere and ask me one way or the other, the same thing she asked. I would tell her to fight racism on the true battle line in your home and community. Fight racism among your own fellow whites. That's where the sincere whites who really mean to accomplish something have got to work.
Compassion for a Caucasian. He's very dangerous now.
Scene. Malcolm is assassinated.
In 1964, Martin Luther King receives the Nobel Peace Prize. What an outrage. That prize should have been mine, but instead that burrhead gets it. What a miscarriage of justice. He stole that peace prize from me. He'll be punished. I promise you that. Malcolm X is the Black Messiah. Now, he's the person that can unify and electrify the coloreds. When he was with the Nation of Islam, there was no conceivable way that he and King would ever form a coalition. But here he comes skipping from Africa, telling everyone that he wants to form a coalition that will include all groups of all colors. In fact, he meets with King to settle their differences. Yeah, we need to deal with this Black Messiah. Sunday, February 21st, 1965, afternoon, the Audubon Ballroom. Malcolm is going to speak. Malcolm's home was firebombed the week before. He starts screaming and whining for protection. We'll do as much as we can. Unfortunately, we're short-handed and can't send any agents to the Audubon Ballroom. The police can't help either. Yuri and her son Billy are sitting in the eighth row. Brother Benjamin speaks first.
And now, without further remarks,
I present to you one who is willing to put himself on line for you. A man who would give his life for you. I want you to hear, listen, to understand. One who is a Trojan for the black man.
Assalamu alaikum, brothers and sisters.
Wa alaikum. Salam.
There's a commotion in the back of the ballroom.
Get your hand out of my pocket! You trying to steal my wallet?
Everyone looks at two men fighting. Malcolm's bodyguards rush to stop the fight.
Hold it, hold it. Don't get excited. Cool it, brothers, cool it.
The two men stand in front of Malcolm. Malcolm falls straight backward, and then all hell breaks loose. Everyone runs outside. Suddenly, Yuri runs onto the stage, kneels next to Malcolm, and puts his head on her lap.
Malcolm, please say something. Please, Malcolm. Please, Malcolm, stay alive.
Someone tells Yuri to go to the side room, and they hand Malcolm's baby and a milk bottle to Yuri and say, please, feed the baby. Malcolm is taken to the hospital down the street, but he's already dead. No more Black Messiah.
Malcolm's life is like the most brilliant of all the stars in the heavens, the North Star. For the North Star is the one star that does not change position or lose its bright intensity. It is a star that set the course for mariners, that gave direction from time immemorial to slaves escaping bondage, triumphantly illuminating today's stark atmosphere, giving light and direction, invincible and inextinguishable. Malcolm is that North Star shining.
Americanism is on trial. Its real test lies in the ability of true Americans to meet and defeat the advocates of destruction of their way of life. Yeah, let us unite in dedicating our life, our energy, our efforts, and our aspirations in a crusade for America. It'll be triumphant if every citizen lives for God and for country.
Scene, Yuri and Bill, Part 2.
Oddly, Yuri's activism intensifies after Malcolm's death. She works for civil rights. She supports the Black liberation struggle and the commie Black Panthers. She helps establish the Asian American movement of the 60s, the demand for ethnic studies, the opposition to the Vietnam War, the search for cultural identity. One of our informants becomes a good friend of the family, and he reports,
well, they have a lot of house guests. Yuri opens their home to everyone and anyone. There are people staying overnight for days, for weeks, for months. Some people are homeless, some passing through town, some are taking advantage. They sleep everywhere, in the kids' beds, on the floor, even in the bathtub.
Yuri, this has got to stop. You're not being a mother. Your heart is too big. Think of our kids. Think of our marriage. There are 20 people staying with us right now. Our kids are fed up. They have no privacy. They want their beds back. They need your attention. We miss you. We can't afford this. We can't feed all these people. You have been going to the neighbor begging for food. For peace sake. You put the kids out in the middle of the street in traffic.
We were demonstrating to get a traffic signal in front of the school.
You almost got them killed.
We got the traffic signal.
And then you and Billy sit right down in front of a construction truck.
They finally hired the Black and Puerto Rican workers.
For God's sake, you got Billy arrested. He's only in high school.
It's part of his education.
It's not worth it. I want you to think about us as being more important than anything else in the world.
No, there are more important things. Look, Bill, the kids have food and a place to stay. There are people who have neither. People are suffering. I have to help them.
You give us no time to be a family. Look, I'm not asking you to give up everything. Just slow down and spend more time with the kids.
Bill, we're part of a collective family. I owe it to the world because the world has given so much to me. To us.
Yuri, the FBI talked to my boss yesterday.
You should know that one of your employees, Bill Kachiyama, he's under surveillance. If you see any suspicious activity from Kachiyama, report it to us immediately. What do you know about his wife, Yuri Kachiyama? Yeah, we have reason to believe that she's a spy for Communist China. You also have information that she buys guns for a radical Asian-American student group at NYU. And you should know that Bill and Yuri were associated with Malcolm X.
My boss is scared. I might lose my job. Where would that leave us?
The FBI?
Yes!
They're watching us?
Yes!
So let them.
They killed your father. Imagine what they could do to our family.
For the record, the FBI had nothing to do with her father's unfortunate demise.
Yuri, the FBI is not only watching us. The FBI is doing something about it. Yuri, think of the kid's future or lack of a future because of the FBI. Think of what would happen to us if the FBI arrested you and put you in prison for whatever trumped up reason. Yuri, we need you here.
Okay.
Yuri begins putting signs up on their front door.
Please do not knock. Bill, you have to help me. You know I can't say no.
Hello, I'm calling for you, Yuri. Sorry she can't organize the next meeting. You have to find someone else.
I know the subject for tonight's speech is job discrimination, but I think it's necessary to examine the history of voting problems in Harlem.
Yuri, let's stay with the main issue and not get sidetracked.
Oh, it's so good to see you tonight. It was a good meeting, wasn't it? How's your family? Is your daughter still in Chicago?
Will you come on? It's late. Let's go.
Of course you can stay with us. We have plenty of room.
No, I'm sorry. You have to find someplace else to stay. We only have room for family. No more.
Bill gets fired from his job. Although he looks for work, he can't get hired. They tell him he's too old. Finally gives up. Since Yuri's working, they decide that Bill can take care of the home. He cooks. And lo and behold, Bill becomes an activist. He had always been involved with the veterans, organizing events, pushing for veterans' rights, hanging out with his buddies, but now...
Bill, what's happening today?
I have a meeting with some high school students who wants to start an Asian American studies group. And remember, we have a committee meeting tonight.
Yuri and Bill become consumed with the attempt to get money for the people who went to relocation camps during World War II. Communists. Pinko commies. Yeah. And then Yuri hits the big time. TV. She and some Puerto Ricans try to draw attention to the fight for Puerto Rico independence. October 25th, 1977. Yuri is 55 years old. I hate this story. Go ahead. You tell it.
I'm with 29 other protesters. We are going to take the Statue of Liberty. We catch the first ferry boat to the island. We try to get to the front of the line, but there's a group of Japanese tourists in front of us. When the boat docks, we run like crazy to get to the statue first, and then we lock the door. Young bloods take down the security guards and handcuff them. We move furniture to block off doors and tape the windows shut. The young bloods run up the winding staircase to the top, and they unfurl the Puerto Rican flag. We hear the police helicopters overhead and boats rushing to the island, and then the police surrounding us. I mean, it's exciting. We hold the statue for 9 hours. Everyone's on TV, and Bill sees me getting arrested. When our daughter asks Bill how he feels about it, Bill says,
"Well, that's Mom. If she thinks something is important, she'll do it. You know, she's stubborn."
Hi, Bill. Wow, dinner smells delicious. Did you watch the news tonight?
Yuri, I'm proud of you. What you did was smart. It's all over TV. It'll be in the newspapers. This will get national attention. Good job. You're a crazy woman. If I had married a nice, normal Japanese girl, I would have had a nice, quiet existence. Instead, I have the most amazing life.
Amazing life. His words, not mine. In the 80s and 90s, Yuri's a busy bee. Reparations thing continues. She supports political prisoners. She fights for the Korean comfort women. She fights for oppressed people against imperialism around the world, whatever that means. Her FBI file grows. Our America is at a crossroads. This time, the time has come to make a choice. We can protect our temples of liberty, or we can go blindly along believing that all is well. In righteous indignation, it is time to drive the debauchers of America from the schools and out into the open. They have no right to instruct in the mental and spiritual development of America's youth. They should be stopped from further debauchery. The communists and their allies of totalitarianism are seeking to weaken America. These traitors who shout of liberty as they seek to destroy it tell our young people that our great country needs to change. These traitors must be destroyed.
Scene. Life takes a toll.
Time catches up with everyone. There is justice in the world. No bad deed goes unpunished. Yuri and Bill take a well-deserved nosedive. It's about time.
Okay, that's enough. It's time for you to stop. We'll handle it from here.
What are you talking about?
We don't want you around anymore. Leave.
I'm not leaving.
We're tired of you mouthing off.
I haven't finished my job.
Oh, yes, you have.
Yeah, we'll see about that.
Bill, get the rope. Mm. Let's tie him up. Let's gag him.
Don't touch me. You can't tie me up.
Oh, yeah? We just did.
How do you like being bound and gagged? Huh, Edgar? Cat's got your tongue? Go ahead, Bill. Let's start. Edgar doesn't belong in this scene. He'll only throw dirt on it. He'll sully it. He doesn't have the right to be in this scene.
Thanks, Malcolm. In 1967, our son Billy, then 20 years old, is hit by a car. When we get to the hospital, blood is gushing out of his leg.
Mom, Dad, do I still have my leg? Don't let them take my leg.
During the next 2 years, Billy has 8 surgeries. Skin grafts, pins in his knees, a plastic artery, a cast to his waist, a 7-inch plate in his thigh, bed sores, abscessing at the heel.
It's agony for our son. The doctors try to save his leg, but in the end, after going through so much pain, gangrene sets in at his heel and it's spreading. So Billy loses his leg. Is amputated at the thigh. We can't afford to buy an artificial leg that's comfortable for Billy. So he only uses his crutches.
After the amputation, Billy gets married, but it's short-lived. He has a hard time finding a job because of his disability. Facing one problem after another, Billy puts on a strong face. We're at a loss on how to help him. He had always been the one watching out for others. He's a leader, but we could see he's changing. Frustrated at not being able to function physically.
And one day, Billy disappears. We called everywhere. His friends, hospitals, police stations. No one knows where he is. We tell some friends that when Billy is depressed, he goes on a ferry ride. So they hurry to the Staten Island Ferry. When they come back,
the people at the ferry said that a young Asian man jumped into the river. They showed me some crutches. They were Billy's.
They found Billy's body 6 days later. A heartache is immense. Billy left a letter.
I want to call the last shot. I do not want to live like I am. I do not want to be a burden to anyone. I want to live, to love, to be loved, to fight for what must be fought for. I love you dearly, and I am thankful for your support.
Yuri just sits and cries. She goes to the ferry.
Billy, did we fail you? Could we have done something? Billy.
Family and friends try to ease the pain of Billy's passing. Bill and Yuri, who had given so much to others, now were on the receiving end.
Twice a year, on Billy's birth and death dates, we go to the ferry and place flowers where he jumped and pour Coca-Cola, Billy's favorite drink, into the river.
On November 18th, 1989, Bill and Yuri's daughter, Aichi, 37 years old, goes to dinner with her daughter, Akimi, to celebrate Akimi's 18th birthday. That night, while waiting for a taxi, Aichi is hit by a car head-on. She flies 200 feet. Akimi is also hit.
I'm at a fundraiser at a friend's home, Bill calls.
Get home right now.
My friend drives me home. I pray it isn't a life or death situation, but I know it's serious.
Yuri, Aichi and Akimi are in the hospital. We need to rush over.
We see Aichi in the emergency room. She's bleeding profusely.
Soon, friends fill the hospital. We let everyone see Aichi. We take turns rubbing Aichi's arm to see if we can bring some warmth to her body. But Aichi's getting colder.
She's bleeding from everywhere, but her face is untouched. Blood is flowing all over the floor and is constantly being mopped up by workers. I have never seen so much blood before.
Everyone is making calls for us. Everyone is praying.
We ask the hospital to keep the life support machine running until our children from the West Coast can see Aichi. The next day, when everyone is here, we have the machine turned off.
Our daughter passes on. More than 1,000 people come to the memorial service. People flying from all over the country. Some from overseas. Many people say kind things about Aichi. One of Aichi's passions is her taiko drumming. During the service, Soul Daiko, the drumming group that Aichi belongs to, plays their hearts out through the tears. Then they give us Aichi's drumsticks.
I lose a daughter. Akemi, our granddaughter, makes a full recovery.
Alkamal Duncan, Aichi's common-law husband, suffers from sickle cell anemia. It's a painful disease.
Alkamal and Aichi met at Billy's memorial service and they became close. Alk became a loving father to Akemi, Aichi's daughter from a previous marriage. To offset the years of suffering, Alk turns to art and music. His spiritual strength allows him to counsel others and help those in distress. Though confined to a wheelchair, his free spirit travels unrestrained. Alkamal is a pillar of strength when Aichi dies. Alkamal's brother had died of sickle cell at only 6 years of age. His sister died at just 19. Only 5 months after the death of Aichi, Alkamal passes away at the age of 43. Aichi and Alk had spent 14 glorious years together.
Imagine what it must have felt like to lose a son, a daughter, and a son-in-law. Yuri continues to fight for human rights. Her energy amazes people. How does she do it? Well, she just does. In 1993, Bill is 72 years old. Bill enters the hospital with chest pains. The doctors run routine tests, and Bill is to be released the next day. There's no indication of anything serious. But one day becomes 2 days, and eventually 11 days. And on October 25th, the doctors tell the family that Bill will be able to go to their family vacation in 2 weeks. And that very day, Bill dies of a cardiac complications. No words can describe Yuri's sorrow.
Oh, Bill, you are my rock. Without you, I couldn't have done anything. You're my Bill. You kept my feet on the ground. You gave our family the best life. When I was running around dragging the kids to protest rallies, you cooked, you cleaned, you opened our home to our friends and family. In your quiet, strong way, you made it possible for all of us to follow our dreams. You are the quiet warrior. We will miss you.
When World War II ended, Yuri was in Los Angeles waiting anxiously for me to get discharged from the Army and to start our life together. I was finally discharged in New York and was feeling bad because my future was uncertain. And I couldn't promise her anything. Yuri sends me a telegram.
Bill, don't worry about apartment, job, etc. Future with you is no risk. It'll be an adventure, happiness, love. We'll be grateful always, anxious to be yours.
And so it was for 47 years.
I'm back. You can't keep me down for long. Shall we continue?
Scene, life without Bill.
We stopped the surveillance on Yuri Kochiyama. She was neutralized. She was no longer a threat to our country. She was harmless, just an old lady.
Now, Edgar, you behave. There is a huge void in her life. Life without Bill is hard.
Where's my wallet? The phone's not ringing. Did I pay the phone bill? Can someone take me to the airport? Which meeting is this afternoon? What's today, Monday? Where's my passport? I know I need to be somewhere.
Somehow she manages to be involved in many political activities. She travels to the Philippines and Japan to raise awareness about political prisoners. She speaks at schools and community events, sometimes as many as five a week. In March 1997, she's 75 years old and she has a stroke. It puts her in the hospital for 1 month. Without the support of her children, her health slowly improves, but she's plagued with chronic problems. She feels shaky, dizzy, and tired. She needs to use a walker. Her work suffers. Through sheer willpower, she travels to Washington, D.C. for a rally for political prisoners. Yuri makes the pilgrimage to Malcolm X's gravesite, something she's done every year since 1966. People crash at her apartment. Her health problems grow worse.
I have inexplicable head problems. I have difficulty with my balance. I can barely stand up, walk, even talk. I'm so weak. I've never felt like this before. I've never been this wobbly. It's frustrating and frightening. I feel as if my head's in a trap. I don't understand what's happening to me. I withdraw from people. I don't want to see anyone. I'm despondent about how sickly and unproductive I am. I'm of no use to anyone and to any political struggle, much less to my family. What's the value of living? It's so quiet. The silence and emptiness is so great. Bill, where are you? Please, speak to me. Nothing. It's so dark. I can't see. Bill, where is your light? Nothing. I am alone. Where is my faith? I feel nothing. Someone pray for me. I can't pray anymore.
Yuri writes farewell letters. Takes an overdose of sleeping pills. Yuri's daughter, Audie, is worried when Yuri doesn't answer the phone. Audie asks the neighbor to check on Yuri. The neighbor finds Yuri in bed in a dazed state. An ambulance comes and takes Yuri to the hospital. She's in bad shape. Oh, oh, mercy, mercy me. All things ain't what they used to be. No, no. Where did all the blue skies go? Poison is the wind that blows from the north and south and east. Oh, mercy, mercy me. Oh, things ain't what they used to be.
Is that you, Marvin Gaye?
I wish.
Malcolm.
Yours truly.
Am I dead?
No, but you tried.
I know.
Why, Yuri?
I'm so tired. I'm so old. It's time.
Oh, Sister Yuri, it's not your time. You must live. Work's not done. The work won't happen without you.
Just an old beat-up woman.
It's not time for you. There's a lot of work to do. You promised me you'll continue our work.
I'm old. I'm no longer good for this cause. I have no energy. I'm no good for anybody.
Now stop that!
I just want everything to end. What's the point?
You can change the world.
We tried, Malcolm. It's still the same as when you left us.
No, it is different. It is getting better. Not a whole lot, not as fast as we'd hope. Can't deny that. But think if we hadn't done anything. The world would be dead, blown to smithereens.
I don't know.
Yuri, your light is still bright. People need your light for guidance, Yuri. You are the North Star. Your light is not ready to be put out. You have to carry on our work. Yuri, you cradled me as I lay dying. You comforted me. You have that gift. You comfort people. People feel good when you're with them.
Hiya.
Bill. My Bill.
What's with the sleeping pills? Have you gone nuts?
I miss you so much. Why did you leave me?
I haven't left you.
I want to be with you. I'm going to join you now.
No. It's not time. Our work isn't finished. You must finish everything we started.
I can't.
Don't talk like that. That isn't like you.
So much has changed. I can't finish our work. There's too much to do.
Just go ahead and die. Let's get this over with.
What are you doing here?
There's nothing for you to do. You're just an old lady on her last legs. You've been neutralized. No one knows who you are. No one listens to you. You've been forgotten.
Lots of people know Yuri.
Not anyone who counts.
What's your problem?
All of you are my problem.
Who invited you? Why do you stick your nose in everybody's life?
Because I need to for the country.
You died a long time ago. I thought you'd be in hell. Go away. Scram.
I'll never go away.
You've been neutralized. How does it feel being dead?
I'll never die. There will always be a J. Edgar Hoover. If not in flesh, then in spirit. I'll be reincarnated.
God help us.
Yuri, you need to carry on. You need to fight this thing. You need to teach. You need to inspire people. He can't win.
Yes, I know.
And you need to tell them about Malcolm and me and you and our life together and our parents and our friends. So no one forgets what happened to us, what we did, what we tried to do.
Yuri, please keep the flame alive. Fight the devil.
I'm not the devil. I'm America's guardian angel.
We're all waiting for you. Billy, Aichi, Alk, and everyone else. But no hurry, Yuri. You still have lots to do.
The students need you, The children need you. You need to pass it on.
Your work is not over yet. Here, let us help you into your wheelchair.
No. Don't help her.
Thank you. You will always stand next to me?
Always.
You bet.
I'll be there, too.
Scene. Epilogue.
And so that's our little story about some really big people. Yuri Kochiyama was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize in 2005.
Nobel Prize? You gotta be joking.
Yuri passed away on June 1st, 2014, in Berkeley, California. She was 93 years old.
Yeah, and mad as hell to the end.
If you'd have met her, she'd have explained to you what an unholy mess the Iraq War was.
Yuri would have told you about Aaron Ouattara, an officer in the United States Army who was court-martialed for refusing to deploy to Iraq because the war is illegal and immoral.
He should be shot. He's a disgrace to the uniform.
After September 11, Yuri made connections between the unjust treatment of Japanese Americans during World War II and the Arabs and Muslims 60 years later.
The United States has gained support for its wars by using the media to whip up war hysteria. During World War II, they demonized the Japanese. Today, they are demonizing Muslims and Arabs. And just as the war against Japan resulted in the racial profiling and internment of Japanese Americans, the so-called war on terrorism has resulted in the racial profiling and illegal detainment of Arabs, Muslims, South Asians, and all people of color living in the United States today.
In 1991, the USA Patriot Act was passed, allowing the FBI and other agencies to search homes without the owner's permission, to wiretap and read mails, emails, without a court order, and to allow the indefinite detention of immigrants. See? I told you I'd be back.
When I was young, I was so red, white, and blue. I couldn't believe America was putting us into internment camps. I couldn't believe that this was happening to us. America would never do a thing like this to us. This is the greatest country in the world. I'm different now. Older, yes. Mature, maybe. Wiser, hopefully. But I'm still red, white, and blue. That will never change. I believe in America.
We would like to close with something from Yuri.
Statement from Yuri Kochiyama. I would like to leave you with these two thoughts. Each generation must discover its mission, fulfill it, or betray it. And life is a book, and you are its author. You determine its plot and pace, and you, only you, turn its pages. I hope each of you will have a purposeful and fulfilling life. Sincerely, Yuri Kochiyama. Good night. Thank you for coming.